today, especially when I model HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I'm here, I'm upright, I'm getting better. And all the people calling from Hollywood, so I appreciate your calls, but I'm getting better, and Be'ezrat Hashem Yetov. Today is Monday, the 15th of January, 2018, and the beautiful day here in Yerushalayim, a little cold, but thank God, bearable. I want to thank everyone who's sitting in front of me, and I also say hello to all those listening across the wide expanse of YUTorah.org. I want to begin this year. I have a lot afterwards that I want to give out. I want to make some comments, but first let me teach. There's no question in my mind that, again, I don't know how many of you heard yesterday's Shayur, but there's no question in my mind that Rav Lessen represented the last of the Yudapeyesha Torah, the way we grew up in America. My generation was very privileged, although I personally am a third generation American, and my father played Sandlot baseball with Hank or Henry Greenberg, whatever name you know him by. Nevertheless, I was totally exposed to the world of Europe, of Mir Slobodka, Tells, all that went with it. We had to learn Yiddish. We had no choice. If you didn't learn Yiddish, you couldn't succeed in the yeshiva. Even my classmates who were Sfadim, among them, one of my classmates was Leon Katzin, Kassin, the son of the chief rabbi, he spoke Yiddish the way with the rest of us. All right, Reb Heschel Schechter made fun of my Yiddish the other day when they honored me here, so you can testify. But his Yiddish is not much better than mine, so I'm not exactly overwhelmed by his poking fun at me. Yes, mem geretik ahakte Yiddish, but mem vashtein ganz gut. We understood Yiddish perfectly. And we were part of that generation. The Mashgiach, Rav Lessen, with all that we spoke about, and I saw yesterday, it made a big impression, the story with the Shidduch, with Rav Volk. He was like a foreign object in the yeshiva. Rabbi Rubin is not here. I would ask Rabbi Rubin to certify what I'm saying. But here, Charlie, you in the yeshiva, you viewed Rabbi Lessen, he was distant. It was like outer space to you. You're a kid from Washington Heights, a Yekka family, but you're an American kid, you're going to MTA, you're going to go on to Harvard, and you viewed Rav Lessen, it was like an alien. Some of us poked through and got to know him very well. And I would say yesterday, the two of the comments I made are very important. The comment where he says to his wife, Nema cook an Americana kin, what I spoke about, that's a very insightful comment. And it reveals a world. And the story with Rav Volk, you have to be a big person. I hope I learned from Rav Lessen on that level. I all my years of teaching, I hope. Okay. I had a very special relationship with the Mashgiach. And I don't know why I sense that more than the yeshiva, I wanted smicha from him. When I look back 70 years later, so how many years later is it? 65 years later, 60 years later, when I look back, I think what bothered me about the yeshiva smicha is that every kid got the same Don smicha. It was a form. And I knew some of my classmates, some of them already were conservative rabbis while in the yeshiva. You understand, I was still in that generation where a few of my classmates wound up in the seminary. It was an unheard of. And some of them were, you know, already on the frumkeit binge, I'll call it. But we all got the same smicha. I learned day and night. My father used to tell my students later when I was teaching in YU and already in BMT when my parents lived here. So my father used to tell my students, you think your Rebbe has knowledge by osmosis? I can tell you, my father used to get up to go to work. He was a postman. He used to get up at like 4:30 and head for downtown. And he would find me asleep at the table. And it's true, I would be up the night the Rav gave shiur Tuesday, Wednesday. Tuesday night, writing up the shiur, I'd fall asleep. I never went to bed. So I worked hard, and yet everyone gets the same smicha. The mashkiach I asked for smicha, and he gave me a personal smicha, and that smicha is very, very valuable to me on a personal level. But more than that, he affected my entire gestalt as a Rebbe. And let me tell you something. I have never gotten angry in the classroom. 59 years of teaching. And remember, I started teaching on an elementary school level. I don't want people who look at me today, you're lucky, postgraduate, you have students who are world famous, etc., etc. I began teaching in Avat Torah in Englewood, 1959. And I can tell you endless stories. It was a struggle, it was a new shul and who wanted orthodoxy. I can tell you one of the greatest shocks of my life. If you want to capture the era, 1959, Englewood, it's hard today. You hear the word Englewood, New Jersey. It's hard to conceive what was. A new shul in a converted house, just beginning. And I'm teaching there. I wanted to get married. In those days, there was no kollel yet. Rabbi Aaron Cutler's influence was not as great as it later becomes in YU. So in order to get married, you have to earn a living. So I'm teaching. That year, I was teaching part-time. The next year, I taught more and ran the Shabbos. I was already married. I needed more money. So here I am teaching, and I'm learning, finishing up smicha, 2 more years to go. I've graduated college, I wind up with 2 master degrees. Don't ask. A real hot shot. B'sach HaKol, I knew nothing yet, but I had a lot of degrees. So here I am sitting in the Beis Medrash, and Reb Melech Shechter comes in. I need a Beis Din for Geirut. Come, I'll show you Geirut, I'll teach you Geirut. Reb Melech Shechter was the father of Reb Heschel, Rabbi Dr. Melech Shechter, PhD from Dropsic. Rabbi Rubin, you knew him?
Yes.
Okay, you know I'm talking about. So Rabbi Wiener, you all knew him. Good, you're rabbi, good.
Around the corner.
Around the corner. So
he was the only one who taught
Shavuos. Right. He taught us halacha. I did my shemesh with him. I learned how to sell chametz and I geirut. So here we go around the corner. There was a mikveh around the corner, and I think it was called Audubon Avenue. We yekeshim mikveh, where the entrance was one place and the mikveh was in another. It was very intelligently done. And you won't believe what I'm about to tell you. Here I am to be part of Geirut. You need a Beit Din, absolutely. This is one of the reasons when Chovevei Torah with their women rabbis, it doesn't get off the floor, because a woman can be the most learned person in the world. I knew Nechama Leibowitz on a daily intimate basis. Rabbi Wiener can testify. I brought her into the Kollel. But she can't be on a Beit Din. She's the Gadol Hadon learning. She could learn better than the whole faculty here put together. So what? We have a division of labor. Man, man, woman, woman. So I come in, and it's a woman and her children who are converting. And my dear students, I fainted on the spot. He was the man involved whose family was converting, was one of the big shots in the school where I was teaching, one of the founders of Englewood, of Avat Torah. And what happened was very simple. He was married to a woman whom he thought was Jewish. Her parents, her mother, whatever, had some sort of conversion. And then the issue broke in Israel, Mihu Yehudi. Now, in my days, everyone read the New York Times. Today, you go online, you get your news online. But in my days, everyone read the New York Times. You know, Reb Moshe Feinstein, there's now Edith Nemanah, that Reb Moshe read the New York Times every day. Fine. So he was reading the New York Times, and he found out about who is a Jew. And suddenly it dawns upon him, if you're not born of a Jewish mother, you have to convert. And you have to convert properly. And evidently his wife either had no conversion, just her father was Jewish, or had an improper conversion. So now that he was becoming more observant, he decided she has to convert and his children. It was one of the most embarrassing moments in my life. They bring in to be part of the Beit Din someone who knows the people converting. So I started on an elementary level. then of course Talmud Torah, I was in the rabbinate. Then I started teaching. Rabbi Belkin appointed me to the Reitz faculty. In reality, it was high school kids. There wasn't a split today, but it was Yeshivas B'Tzvi Chanan, high school kid age. Then I taught on a collegiate level. Then I taught for now many, many decades on a postgraduate level. All right, on a postgraduate level, you don't get angry. You're teaching adults. You're teaching your Talmidim Chavayrim Shalcha, you would call it. But there were many times I couldn't get angry. I could get angry. I had every right to be angry. And I always thought of the Mashgiach and Rav Volk. And I always realized that, what do you remember about your Rebbeim? When you get together 40, 50, 60 years later, you remember when they acted foolish. You don't remember when they acted intelligently. You expect the Rebbe to act intelligently. I know when I get together with my generation, all of us recall the Purim Chagiga. Remember, it's the legendary Purim Chagiga. It's the early 50s, and the boys are singing, Pura Volk is a shtickel bulk. Lai, 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 lai. He was a little heavy. Rav Volk was a little heavy. No, the boys are singing, have a good time, Purim, and the Rav Yeruchim Gerelik gets hold of him the next day in the hallway, and we know at that time I didn't do the research, but I know today I can explain to you why the Telge and the Ratna didn't get along. But then I was a kid, I could never understand why the Rebbeim and why you, there was enmity between every Rebbe, each Rebbe. Oh, what went on, the Telge, the Ratna, the Mira, the Slabatka, and Oy, Gutsalapit, and Ungarisha, there was one Ungarisha Rebbe. I cannot repeat what the Rebbeim called them behind his back. And he was the only one who had a paskin, Rav Shmuel Gerstenfeld, the only one who had a paskin. So Rav Yeruchim meets Rav Volk. Nu Shmuel, was haben die Taten der Talmiden gerufen? What did the students call you at the Chagiga? Shtickel Bulk. Was is a Bulk? What is a Bulk? And Rav Volk says he doesn't know. And Rav Yeruchim tells him, a Bulk, das is a Shtickel Fleisch mit zwei Egen. A piece of meat with two eyes. You don't know what happened. We come to class where, you know, Purim is gone, forgotten, Heint is Purim, Morgan is Leis, give me a nickel and wach me a rice. Remember what we used to say? Today is Purim, tomorrow is not, give me a nickel and throw me out. So we come to class the next day, and Rav Volk walks in, and he looks at us, opens the Gemara, slams the Gemara, next to Mol Beta Stickel Fleisch mit zwei Egen zu sagen this year. Ich will nicht. You should ask a piece of meat with two eyes. And I will, he slams the Gemara, walks out. Then Mr. Abrams pops in and suspends us all. You know, Abrams was caught up. He felt bad, I have to say. I want to say he felt bad. He knew we didn't do anything wrong, but what could he do? So then he gave us advice. We had to write an apology letter. So you see, What do the students remember? They don't remember the good shirim Rav Volk said when he told the story about Telge, or when he got involved, who was greater, Rav Chaim Rabinovich or Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. You all remember when he got angry. So I tell you, the Mashgiach influenced me in 59 years of teaching, and many of my students are listening who have studied with me 30 years, 40 years. I challenge you, when did I get angry? It's Mashgiach's influence. There was more influence. Chesed. You see, certain Rebbeim, and again this hurts, it comes out in the memoir literature, certain teachers, they become very cruel, they become autocratic, they feel, you know, they walk into class, they run the world. If you're going to pass or fail, you're in their hands. L'chaim l'mavet. It's unbelievable. A good Rebbe has to be just the opposite. Every Talmud you have to look at, what is he lacking? Where can I help him? And here I'll tell you two stories. I won't mention names, although I don't know any reason why I shouldn't mention names, but their wives will be upset, so I won't mention names. Had one Talmud fed into me from Washington Heights. These are two boys, both from Washington Heights. Both went to Yeshiva Soloveitchik. That was one of the feeder schools for MTA. Slanta and Soloveitchik were the two big feeder schools. So this kid, his father's a Rav. and a nice kid. And yet, he was only accepted into the yeshiva on al-tanai, conditionally. If he doesn't do good, they're not keeping him, they're throwing him out. And I got to know this kid. And his mother was ill. And his father spent a fortune of time taking care of the mother. And I worked overtime to give him confidence. You can do it. You can conquer. His sister, Tova Lichtenstein, knew the family well. His sister was no longer alive. Sister ran away at a very early age, got married, flew the coup. Mother was ill, didn't want any part of it. Okay. But this kid was home. He was the younger one. And I built up his confidence. When I went in Aliyah, they took a movie that last day in New York. I still have the movie. And you can read my lips. I'm saying to the kid, you are going to be a great Talmud Chacham. You can read my lips. And Kachav, he became a musmach of the yeshiva, PhD, did postdoctoral work. All right. Baruch Hashem. It's like a father and son until today. And that's the Mashgiach. Have chesed. Don't be a big shot. Look into a kid. See where you can help him. I had another kid. Very famous. His name has appeared in the New York Times many times. And he came from a family, survivors. His mother, with all the problems of second generation. His mother had a tremendous guilt conscience. She and her sister were the only two out of 11 children who survived from Paris. And the only reason they survived, Aaron, they were arrested. They were in jail when the Gestapo and the Vichy police looked for them. So you can imagine what with a mother with a guilt conscience and a father who barely had food to eat, built like Abba Braunschweigel during the crucial years, there was no food. What this kid went through. So he's an only child. Brilliant kid. And he goes to Hirsch, to Breuer's. And here you have this brilliant kid in Breuer's, and he's asking questions. And the teacher, whoever the teacher was, if I ever met that teacher, I'd forget Musa and I'd smack the person's face. Teacher says to him, I don't want to mention his name, but we'll call him John. John, when you know all the Torah and every Rashi, then you'll ask questions. Until then, keep your mouth shut. By the time this kid was out of elementary school, when his father wasn't looking, he was eating treif pizza, wasn't putting on tefillin. Could you imagine? And then the kid feeds into YU, and I'm his first Rebbe. And he described the impact I made. He said, I had a Rebbe who not only answered questions, but encouraged questions. And I can tell you, until today, I've never let a question unanswered. Sometimes you don't know the answer. Kids can ask fabulous questions. You do your research. Sometimes even answering that, there's no answer, but you diagram, you explain why you reached that conclusion. That itself is an answer. And you see, you looked into the background, the chesed. Then I got to know his parents. I got to know his father died young. I got to know his mother. I got to understand the entire picture. If I can use a Yiddish word that I don't know how to translate, the Mashgiach taught me mitleid. Mitleid. Anyone here can translate it? Mitleid. It's more than compassion. Mitleid. That you feel with the other person, you try to understand.
You should say empathy.
Empathy. It's not sympathy. Empathy, perhaps. Mitleid. And this I got out of the Mashgiach. Then I want to tell you something else that happened. That again, it's the same theme. This theme comes back with Reb Aaron Cutler. The theme comes back with the Mashgiach. The theme will come back with the Rav. And this is crucial nowadays when we're caught in such a quagmire with the Chovevei Torah and all that it began. And it's not going away. I mean, I've said this already for 10 years. And it's not going to go away. I mean, I will not call them by the name they use. I call them neoconservatism. But they're not going to go away. There's a demand for it. There are people willing to put millions and millions of dollars into them to wash the face of people like Rakefet, who say that lesbian or gay relationships are not condonable. All right? It's very sad. But this is the reality, and we have to live with it. The tradition, the living tradition, is the heart of Yiddishkeit, the heart of Torah Shebaal Peh. This is what our Torah is all about. Once you break the living tradition, you alter it, you subvert it, we're cutting off ourselves from Torah Shebaal Peh. And tell you a good story with the Mashgiach. Shavuos, we walked from all over to be in the yeshiva for Shavuos. You know, as I said, the Bronx fed into Washington Heights. So Shavuos, yeah, had a nice crowd, a few hundred in the dormitory, and a few hundred who walked to be in the yeshiva. And we were learning all night, and then in the morning, and dancing. And I already was learning Masechet Beitzah, and you all know you're not allowed to dance on Yom Tov. The whole question of Shem Yitakim Kli, musical instrument, right or wrong? So clap hands. These are real halachic problems. So I asked the Mashgiach, how are we allowed to dance? I quoted the Tosfot in Beitzah, and his answer was magnificent. Exactly the answer of Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Mim getanzt in Slabotka und der Alte und der Shishiva, der Lovishmodachai, haben nicht ungemerkt. We danced in Slabotka on Shavuos night, and no one rebuked us, no one reprimanded us. Beautiful answer. And there too, you felt the tradition, you felt the ongoing world, you felt dor l'dor, one generation to another. Yishabach ma'asecha. You felt zekeli v'yanvehu, elokeya vi v'aramamenu. And as Rashi says, lo iti hitchila hakadusha, but it's muhzeket me avotai, or what I dashed yesterday, v'yikari v'hem shmi v'shem avotai Avraham v'yitzchak v'yitkularov v'kerav ha'aretz. And all this added to the feeling of Europe reaching out to us. American kids, but we were part of Europe yet. We still understood the culture. We still were breathing the air of the Litvashi Yeshiva. And when I look back on all my research, which undermines me, I don't have to tell you, everyone thinks included, won't help me. My wife says it will not help you. If the Rav said to his shamashim when my work came out in Rav Lezer Silva, oh, Dr. Rotkoff is my historian. You understand? Which means I'm an Amoritz, a boor, Nenu Yerei, but I know a little bit history. It won't help me. All the Torah I've taught, it helped us. The Rav said, historian. And I didn't even know how to appreciate that until I did my own research on the Rav, and I realized what Rav Lezer Silva meant to him. But all that I did, and Shiflat Adam and Gadlat Adam, knowing the Mashgiach, I wanted to understand it a lot deeper. And the most beautiful sight of all, and here Rabbi Reuben will be an aid sheni, will give aid at Nemana, when the Mashgiach came in to speak, every term he spoke in every class in the yeshiva, the Rav would sit there like one of the students, listening to every word that the Mashgiach said. Am I right, Yitzchak?
Yeah, but I was in awe.
We were in awe, absolutely. He sat there.
You consider the level that the Rav was on.
Right. But then later in years, I got to understand the Rav. You see why the Rav loved Rav Lessen so much. And he writes about this in Ish Halacha, was Katlat Adam. When Musa matured, you see, Musa, there was a big split in the second and into the third generation between Shiflut Adam and Gadlut Adam. Reb Yisrael Horowitz, and by the way, Reb Yisrael Horowitz, who was the last living Talmud of Reb Yisrael Horowitz, the Nevadic Rosh Yeshiva, Sarah Netanyahu's father. Sarah's father was the last living Talmud. He died, obviously, about 97, 98. When he died, it was the last living Talmud of Reb Yisrael. And Reb Yisrael, that went into an extreme with putting people down and the loneliness of man, and it stressed, oh, who are you, what are you, and the ability to let everyone laugh at you. You know, you all know, those of you that learned in the Vaduk with me 120 years ago, you all know we went into drugstores and we asked for potatoes. We went into shuk, into the vegetable stores, and asked for drugs. Let them laugh at you. What the Rav loved about Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen's lesson was that it was a total picture, Gadlut Adam. It's a different world. Doctorates have been done now in Hebrew U. Tukachinsky did a brilliant doctorate on the Altar of Slabodka. The stress was never on negativism. It was on positivism. And that appealed to the Rav. You see, that appealed, that's like brisk. The Gadlut, the mind, the development of the mind, the analytical approach. The Rav used to boast, my father said, Reb Moshe said, you couldn't teach Gemara to an American kid who's learning biology and chemistry and physics without Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim took Gemara learning and put it on a level that equals any type of scientific approach in the world. Same thing with Musa. Gadlut Adam, and the way Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen lesson had abgeteicht, or he explained, not looking with an idea, but as we said yesterday, how we approached it, what is the Torah teaching us? What do we have to do? How do we have to live?
What was the altar? What was his full name?
The Altar, who are you talking about? The Altar of the Nevadik or the Altar of Slabodka?
Slabodka
was Reb Nachman Zvi Finkel. The Altar of the Nevadik was Reb Yisrael Horowitz. And I just met the direct descendants of Reb Yisrael Horowitz in Hollywood, Florida. Direct descendants. They said, do you know who my grandmother was? She was a daughter-in-law. I said, of Professor Jean Yaffin. I said, not only do I know who she was married to, and I said, but she happened to be very good friends with my cousin, Muriel Daniel. You follow? It's a Borough Park family. Ah, Muriel the Daniel, suddenly my prestige went up. But the final vart I want to say about the Mashgiach is a sad vart. And here's where we're all caught up in it's an insoluble problem today. The right-wing world, and I'm as right-wing as anyone, those of you who know me, but my own self, okay? But the right-wing world, somehow it lives with a feeling that anyone else is totally wrong, incorrect, unsuccessful. And you see it in Art Scroll. Could you imagine Art Scroll recreates history that Rabbi Revel never existed? It all began with Mr. Mendelovich. It hurts. Intellectually dishonest. It shows such a fault line in your intellectual character. So a Talmud, and I want to thank him, a Talmud, Bruce Mazenkis, I yet knew his father who was in MTA with me. I believe Bruce lives in Beit Shemesh. Do you recognize the name?
Across
the street. So Bruce sent me a picture of Rav Lesson's grave, and he made a very interesting comment. You look at the grave, I don't want to read the whole thing, it summarizes everything we've spoken about, Adin HaNefesh, Atzil HaRuach, Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Oivet HaBriot, Mekarvan LaTorah, Baruch Hashem, I don't have to look at my monument to see it. I just got a plaque that was hung in the office this morning where it says, Havi mi talmidav shel Aharon, Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. Beautiful. And then it says, Av Beitin, where he was in Litter, Mevetikei talmide yeshivat Slabodka. And then the lie hits you in the face. Umashpia ruchani, Asarat shanim, B'yeshivat b'atzot abrit. And it does in Yeshivot Ba'at Sota Brit Mashpia Ruchani Sheka V'chazav U'mashkiach Ruchani B'Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan Al Yad Yeshiva University Yoter Me 25 Shanim 44 to 75 54, 64, say, Yotem Mishloshim Shana, Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. So poor Bruce asked me, how can it lie like this? The answer is very simple. Rav Lessen had two children that survived. One son was a Rav, was in the spirit of YU. His son, as I told you, contacted me years ago. We had a beautiful ceremony here in the Kollel, exchanging smichot, the one that I got from his father, and I have copies of his of Rav Lessen's smichot from Europe. That son is a very famous hand surgeon on the coast. After the fall of communism, he devoted himself to helping Chassidei Umat Olam, Goyim, who saved Jews in Lithuania. Had a whole organization, may still have it, did wonderful things. All right, that's one branch of the family. The other branch of the family is his daughter who married Rav Avigdor Miller, that ultimately saved Rav Lessen's life. Rav Avigdor Miller was as American as cherry pie, apple pie, blueberry pie, call it what you wish. But Rav Avigdor Miller moved way to the right of Yeshiva University. And I want to tell Bruce, I am positive that the language of the monument was composed by Rav Avigdor Miller, not by anyone else. And if Rav Avigdor Miller composed the language, I can understand already why Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan remains a non-entity. Aaron Rakefit protests, Kol Kore Bamidbar. This is what we're up against today. Yes, Morty. It doesn't say, but looking at it, it looks like Harmanuchat. Check it out with him. He says, here's what he says. I looked him up on Google and found a picture of his kever here in Israel. Apparently, his family was not proud of his association with Ritz, and it mentioned him being a mashkiach. Mashpia Ruchani, first of all, Mashpia Ruchani is a Hasidic term. That's Rabbi, my Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, Mashpia, Mashkiach Ruchani, for decades in Yeshivat in the USA, with no mention of Ritz.
Harazaitim.
Harazaitim it is? Uh-huh. Interesting. Thank you. Answers the question. Harazaitim. Okay. I want to come to my Rebbe Muvhak. To deal with the Rav, I need 22 years. I spent 22 years in the Kollel dealing with the Rav. Out of three Sheyurim out of those 22 years, came my two volumes on the Rav. Ani modeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm zeicher today, in old age, that the Sfarim are appreciated. It's very hard to deal with the Rav, because when my Sfarim came out, people literally wanted to pull me apart, kill me, shoot me, eat me up alive. When the documentary on the Rav came out, which a one-man show, it's the only thing I ever did in my life against all odds, everyone laughing at me, belittling me, making fun of me, you'll never achieve it. It took me three tries, and I got there. Until today, there are people who will be critical, pro and con, left and right. What is the problem? What's the problem? Rakefit's an honest guy in 600 pages on the Rav in two volumes. There's not one word of Rakefit. The biography, no one has found a mistake. The rest of the volume is the Rav word by word. I had miracles how I put it together. I write in the introduction. It's Mamish Minashamayim. It's not a work that a normal human being can do, that I should take notes on Sheyurim that many holes have fed me and write in a different color when the Rav speaks about his life. And then, decades later, put it all together. Unbelievable. And Modela Kadosh Baruch. But the problem with the Rav is very simple. How do you portray the Rav? No? Portray him as a Rosh Yeshiva. So everyone yells and shouts at you. He was a Jewish philosopher. I can tell you people in England, very important Rabbanim, ripped the heck out of my work on the Rav that I didn't do him justice. I portrayed him too much as a Rosh Yeshiva, quote, end quote. I mean, you can see it in print. I couldn't believe my eyes. They didn't know the Rav, never met the Rav, never spoke with the Rav. I knew the Rav intimately. But it's a real problem because he was a brisker. He never wanted to publish in Halacha. We will have our last laugh on Rebbe about 100 years from now. You'll say you were very proud to have known Aaron Rakefet, but give it 100 years. But philosophy you can publish, because in philosophy there's no right, there's no wrong. You can follow the Rambam, follow the Rashba, follow the Ravid, follow Aristotle. Aristotle, you can follow Plato, you can... Hashtia Kedat, Einonais. So of course, the Rav's initial publications are all in Jewish philosophy, and until today, Rabbi Sherman, people are trying to figure out the Rav's philosophical approach. In my humble opinion, it's a non-starter, because he used it as a tool, l'habatzat Torah, if you follow what I'm saying. He didn't go as a philosopher. He went philosophy, darshanut, what fit in to his viewpoint of brisk, and at that moment in time, at times he shifts gears, and a lot is being written. Kakirich just had an article. Larry Kaplan has dealt with it. Others have dealt with it. What is the Rav's philosophical thrust? And in my humble opinion, there's no answer. The philosophical thrust depended upon the moment, because the heart of the Rav was Shas, Paiskim, Brisk, and all that went with it. When the video, when the documentary on the Rav came out, you should know, again, and there I bear less responsibility, because once I found the producer, and once I was very privileged, Abe Lubavitch, I have to mention his name, with Lord's Eichet Tzadik Levracha, put up $1 million. We never had the Schnur money. And I said to Abe, you're saving. He said, first of all, I want to honor the Rav's memory. It's my Rebbe too. Secondly, I loved your work on the Rav. Your two volumes were totally honest. Thirdly, my wife's family davened in his father's shul in East New York. So that my wife's grandfather was the Baal Tokeya. He blew shofar and davened shachris, Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur. So our families went back a long way, and Abe Lubavitch single-handedly, we were able to hire the, if you saw the documentary, you know the level it's on, we were able to hire the top people from public service broadcast that the documentary should be on the highest level. I can tell you even more, say to let it be public knowledge, but Rebaron Lichtenstein Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, the world is not the same since Rebaron died, Joseph, you have to understand that. But all right, that's life. Life has to move on. So Rebaron already, his speech was not clear. So you should know, public service said you can't use these interviews with Rebaron. The speech doesn't meet our level. So I told the producer, you have to explain to them, without the interviews with Rebaron, we don't have credence. Understand? Rabbi Aaron being interviewed, this gives it credence. So you know what the compromise was. Under Rabbi Aaron's speech, they put typecast. You follow? So that you heard him speak and you could read, and that, they b'dievet, it reached the standards of public broadcast. So again, people, until today, just last week I was criticized by someone in this very building. The documentary, it shows the Rav too much philosophy. All right, this is absolutely true. It is very hard, if you didn't know the Rav intimately, it's very hard to draw the line where Brisk ended and Berlin began. It's very hard to draw the line. If you knew the Rav intimately, the question never arose. It was a beautiful, harmonious relationship. And here, if I can come back to Lakewood, I might have remained in Lakewood. I was happy in Lakewood. Libi Chashka B'Torah. They ripped up the New York Times. If you want a simple description of the Rav, he was Rabaron Cutler on one level, and on the other level, he read the New York Times and commented on it daily. That says it all. That says it all. Meeting the Rav, all your questions, all your quests, totally dissipated. And I'll say something stronger and deeper and absolutely correct. What did I speak about before? Rav Lessen, in my humble opinion, that was the end of the Litvisher experience, that man hat gedacht, reden Yiddish, trachten Yiddish, weinen in Yiddish, and lachten in Yiddish. With Rav Lessen, you had to think, laugh, cry. It was an East European experience. What's amazing about the Rav, his native language was Yiddish. No one could equal the Rav's Yiddish. The Vot in the Yeshiva was there are three great speakers in the world. Churchill, Abba Ibn, and the Rav in Yiddish. He was something fabulous. I've played tapes for Rosh Yeshiva here in Israel. They hear the Rav's Yiddish. It's unbelievable. And yet, the Rav was one of us. He already was Americanized, westernized. You felt totally at home with him. There was no bridge to climb, no mountain to climb. Totally at ease. And I'll tell you a story, Bididi Haviyavda. I wasn't the Rav's Talmud yet. I was a kid. 56 it has to be. First year of college. Second year of college. Adlai Stevenson was running for president against Eisenhower. Am I right? Stevenson versus Eisenhower. Stevenson, if I recall, was the governor of Illinois. He was an intellectual. And the Rav had to go downtown. See, today you can't conceive of this. He had to go take the subway. Today, every Rosh Yeshiva has a car and a driver at his disposal. Whoever heard of a Rosh Yeshiva taking the subway would be unheard of. But those days, we were simple people. But in order to get from the yeshiva to the subway, and I believe he was taking the 8th Avenue, not the 7th Avenue. 7th Avenue is two blocks away. But the 8th Avenue already is a mahalach. What would you say, Charlie? Five blocks.
Does it run on Broadway?
No, the 7th Avenue runs on Broadway. But the A train was even further over. I come out of the yeshiva, and there's the Rav with a few kids around him. I say, what's going on? We're walking Rebbe to the train.
Did they call him Rebbe in those days?
These kids were his Talmidim, yeah.
Did they call him Rebbe?
What did they call him?
I don't know.
They called him Rebbe. As I recall, they called him Rebbe. These were his Talmidim. The Rav was in general, but when you were close to the Rav, Rebbe. You never said the Rav to his face. Rebbe. So I said, I'll join them. You know what they were talking about? The Rav was answering their questions on Adlai Stevenson and Dwight Eisenhower. And I'll never forget, I'm quoting the Rav, if not word by word, exactly his thoughts. He says, unfortunately, Stevenson will never be elected. He's too intellectual for the average person. And the Rav says, the average American, they love cowboys, robbers, Indians, movies, Adlai Stevenson, too deep for them. Eisenhower, war, general. He never read a book in his life. They say about Eisenhower that he started a book on Jackson. He was very enthralled by President Jackson because he too was a warrior, but he never finished it. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But the Rav, I'll never forget, here I am, a kid out of Lakewood, and here you're walking with the Gadol Hadar, and one of the young people bothering him, and he's totally at home. Eisenhower, Stevenson, New York Times, events, totally at home. We never felt any distance. And this was in New York. In Boston, he was absolutely, my description is correct. In Boston, you know more, Tova Lichtenstein told me my father went into the kindergarten in Maimonides with a lulav and etrog to explain to the kids what the lulav and etrog is all about. Maimonides, I don't know today, was open on Cholomoed Sukkos. Why was it open Cholomoed Sukkos? Who ever heard of a yeshiva ktana being open on Cholomoed? So that the kids should see a sukkah and should be able litol lulav and etrog. He was totally caught up in the American reality. And this is what made the Rav so different. There was no other Rosh Yeshiva who was a rabbi in the sense that the Rav was a rabbi in the United States. His dream, and this I only learned afterwards when I did my research, his dream in the 30s was to be like Reb Lezer Silva. His father was very upset. His father sees this giant that he raised, this brilliant son, an enekel of Reb Chaim, and there he is in Boston, wasting away with all due respects to children, lulav and etrog and sukkah. You don't need Harav HaGon, Reb Yosef Dov, Levi Soloveitchik, Ben Harav HaGon, Reb Moshe Ben Harav HaGon, Maran, Reb Chaim Briska, to show a kid lulav and etrog. And Reb Moshe fought, oh, his son, he's wasting away. And here you have Rabbi Revel. No, fill me in. I have reason to be proud. My blood relative. Rabbi Revel saw Reb Moshe's wasting away. Rabbi Revel understood that it's not good to have a Reb Moshe Soloveitchik not happy. In 1939, they opened a branch of the yeshiva in Boston. A kollel elyon. And there was the Rav, the outstanding names, all the names you'll give, the Scheinberg brothers, Reb Pinchas, Reb Chaim, the Chait brothers, all the names of Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Back, later of Baltimore, Rabbi Yechiel Michel Feinstein, who later becomes the son-in-law of the Bristol Rav, Reb Moshe's nephew. They all gathered around the Rav. They loved the Rav. It was an unbelievable experience. And Reb Moshe now is happy. His son is being challenged. And you know, without students, you never amount to what you could have been. When you think of some of the greatest minds in modern times, such as the Rakat Shabagong, such as the Chazon Ish, think one step further. Imagine had they been challenged by students. The Rav spoke about this. He didn't mention the name, but I can tell you 99.90% certain he was referring to the Chazon Ish. And I remember Rebbe saying, if the Chazon Ish had students in front of him like I have, they would have challenged him on this point, and he would have refined it a lot better, quote, end quote. And this Boston, then, as things are beginning in Boston, and you have the kollel and fundraising, and what becomes YU, Yeshiva and Yeshiva College, Rabbi Revel is helping fund, and you have this tremendous development. Who knows what could have been further? And then, of course, Rabbi Revel dies, Reb Moshe dies, and finally, May of 1941, the Rav is called upon to succeed his father. And in this little classroom in New York, and there weren't that many students, it began 15 students, 20 students, later 25 students. In my time, maybe there were 35 students sitting in front of the Rav. In that little classroom, room 102 in New York, the Rav became the Rav. And it was a precious experience to have been his Talmid. Now, before I go further, we also have to talk about the 1930s. Everyone takes for granted, and this too is a mistake that we make, everyone takes for granted you're born into greatness, you have greatness, you don't struggle. A lot of criticism of the arts scroll, not just by people like myself, but even within the writing world, is that they make it seem too easy. Part of the struggle is it's self-important. Just think what the Chafetz Chaim went through until he became the Chafetz Chaim. The Rav, his story is unbelievably fascinating. I don't know of any other gadol where you have a person seeking, searching, being exposed to so many different points of view. The world explodes while he's a teenager. Here he is, a kid born in Klujana. The biggest, born in Klujana, Mark, because his grandfather, grandparents, the Rebbe Yehuda Feinstein, Palmist Reb Moshe, if you married Rebbetzin Pesha, will support you for 10 years. So for 10 years, approximately, the Rav lived in Klujana. By the way, everyone thinks the Rav was born in Brisk. According to my classmate, the Rav's son, Dr. Grach, Chaimke once said that you can count the times my father was in Brisk on the fingers of one hand. Masha hu kazeh. You didn't travel like today. But of course, Brisk was a tremendous influence through his father. So here you have the Brisk influence. You also have the father, the grandfathers, and the other grandfather, Rebbe Yehuda Prujana, Rebbe Yehuda Feinstein. Rebbe Yehuda Feinstein, to quote the Rav, was born before Matan Torah. He was of a Lashana before Reb Chaim changed the whole approach to Torah. So, unlike what we spoke about yesterday, Rebbe Yehuda Prujana was a posek mufak. The Rav said he knew all of your Adaya Shachantaz on the fingers of his hand, backwards and forwards. He was a posek mufak. Then his father winds up in the rabbinate. His first rabbinate, Hussein, his father, has a lot of Akmas Nefesh. The Balabatim resent his father. They say he was only hired because he's Reb Chaim's son. Kenish Lerinin is Nishtakut Shtatrav. Reb Moshe did not have it easy. Someone was listening to my Shirma, my first rabbinate, so he tries to comfort me. He says he found out that after I was rabbi, so I was the second rabbi there. Rabbi Herzog was first, and I was second rabbi. Then they didn't have a rabbi for 1 or 2 years. Then they had Rabbi Lazar, Nebuch, such Akmas Nefesh. He dies very young afterwards. Then they don't have a rabbi again. And then they finally get a rabbi who survives the passage of time. So people from the Kehillah were telling my Talmud, tell your Rebbe not to worry that he had such a hard time. It's the Balabatim didn't know what they wanted. Had he been the third or fourth rabbi, he would be there until today. So I want to tell you, Baruch Hashem, that I was the second rabbi, and I had plenty of Akmas Nefesh, and it turned me into a mensch. It made me grow up. But be it as it may, Reb Moshe had a lot of Akmas Nefesh in Hussein. He was there 3 years. Then he went to Chaslovich. And these were the most formative years of the Rav's life. And here's where Chabad comes into the picture. The Rav was very different than Reb Aaron Kotler, very different than all the other names you can mention, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, every name you can mention. The Rav was exposed to Chabad during his teen years. And Chabad left a deep impression upon his soul. It's not just exposed to Chabad, but he learned Chabad. He studied Tanya, he studied Likutei Torah, but he saw Chabad. And the Rav always spoke about, and I can tell you this, Eidut Nemana, how in Chaslovich, in the main shul, one little area was fenced off. And the Rav asked, why was this area fenced off? You couldn't go near there. And the answer was, that's where the Alter Rebbe davened when he was running away from Napoleon. And the Alter Rebbe davened in that spot. No one else is allowed to stand there. The last time I was in Maimonides in Boston, if you look where the Rav davened, it's as if he's coming in any minute. JBS. That's what it says on the little, what would you call it, cloth covering the shtender. And no one goes near there. It's if Rebbe is going to come back any moment and take his place. If anyone's listening, I wonder whether they put in a chain today, like in Haslovich. If anyone can tell me, I'll be happy to hear. But you see the depth of the experience. It was more than knowledge. It was an appreciation. Did the Rav become a Chabadnik? So, you know, I differ with Chaim Dalfin. Chaim Dalfin reaches the conclusion that the Rav ultimately was chocolate and white, you know, like these cookies they make today. Entman even makes them. It's amazing. Half chocolate icing, half white icing. He was half Litvak, half Chassid. I disagree. I say the Rav remained a Litvak, but there was icing on the cake that had Hasidic overtones. See, but that too. Then the communists take over. This left a deep impression on the Rav. And this is something that I got to appreciate. If you look at volume 2 of the Rav, I quote Rebbe word by word. He was in such fear of the communists. He saw what they did in Haslovich. Overnight, a community that was 99% Shomrei Shabbos, Shomrei Torah, Mitzvah, Shomrei Shabbos, overnight, no one under the age of 70 dared to go to shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And then they smuggled the family out. This, of course, his sister writes a memoir, The Soloveitchik Heritage, by Shulamit Soloveitchik Meiselman. Smuggled them out at risk of life. They get to Poland, and here his father is teaching in Tachkamoni, and the Rav is living in the poorest area in Warsaw. And that's overwhelming. He meets the Majidzichs, the Polish Chassidim. Those of you that are Polish, you were not Chabadnikim in Poland at that time. You were Majids, you were Ger, the Alexandra Chassidim. Oh, Poland was filled with Chassidim. And that's the story that the Rav tells, that he repeats, that's on, it's on the computer today. I don't know, when I see the computer, I say, you're mechuyev al pi din to kiss the computer. What that has done for the Chatzat HaTorah is beyond words. Ayer hashtiyat not in Torah, but that's life. Uvachata b'chayim. Every time you drive, you can be a murderer, or you can be the nicest driver in the world and wave. I get a thrill when I wave people in and they wave back to me. If they don't wave back, I say, they didn't learn. I say to Marcus, see, they didn't learn Musa. They don't know Hakarat HaTov. I let them in, wave to me, thank me. But some people give you a big smile, wave. And the story, oh, the story with the Majlis de Shtibble, how can you not be overwhelmed by that story? It's on the computer today. Which website I have it special. Like, I just, when I want to listen and cry and see the Rav before me. And you know the story where the Rav overslept. The human being, a kid, a teenager, he oversleeps Shabbos afternoon, and all the Litvish shuls have daven Mariv. And he figures he'll catch Mariv, he'll go to the Majlis de Shtibble, Zehat Nacht by Bnei Hecholen, by Mizmor LeDavid. And he describes how he comes into the shul, and he's tall chassid during the week, Gibbig bent over, Vasatreg, carries water on his back, wearing a garment that is ripped and sewn and ripped, the Bekeshim, more sewing than at the actual garment. And he says to him, then Vetman Davin Marav, when will we Davin Marav? And the Chassid looks at him and says, Vasi, younger man, what's with you, young man? Du bangst nach im Wach, you long for the weekday? And the Rav gave a fabulous talk on the basis of that story on a Jew loving Kedusha, not wanting to let go of Kedusha, not wanting to let go of sanctity. See, the Rav was a different human being. It was brisk, but there was so much more. And then he goes to Germany. And the story was going to Germany, Rabbi Schachter got into it, there was a whole machloket he wrote, he was running away from the draft. The real story I worked on, if you read my footnote in the first volume of the Rav, when I do the Rav's biography, I worked on that footnote for hours with Tova, with Dr. Tova Lichtenstein. Why? Because we both agreed we didn't want to embarrass the Peschel, but we wanted to be truthful. So we wanted to do it in a way. The truth is he would have gone to Berlin. It had nothing to do with the draft. But he started college in Poland. Excuse me. The Polish Free University. Started studying law like Rabban Soloveitchik. And then the draft came up. So that was the catalyst to push him out at that time. He would have probably graduated college and then gone to Berlin. But when he saw that they're going to draft him, so his father agreed. It was a very hard decision for his father to send his young son, his gone, his pride and joy, to send him to Berlin. And then Rebbe goes to Berlin, 1926 actually. Rabban Lichtenstein wrote 1925 in an article he did on the Rav in the early 60s for B'nai B'rith. It dealt with great Jews of the 20th century. And I copied what Rabban wrote 1925. And Manfred Lehman, Zichrono Levracha, chopped my head off. Where did I get 25? He had 26. So I said to Rabban, I said, Aaron, where did you get 25? Look, Manfred Lehman is chopping my head off. He has all the documents. He got from the German documents survived in Berlin. The Rav's entry, his application, his CV. So Aaron said it was in the year, 25. All right, I corrected myself. In the book, it's 26. Now, the original article, which was published in Tradition, is 25. In the book, it's 26. And the Rav spoke about those 7 years in Berlin. Basically, it was 6 years, but 6.5 years, 26 through 32. The Rav called them, I give you the quote with the source, the seven good years. I mean, and could you imagine what we're talking about? Here we're talking Berlin, and I've said this so many times, every goan in the world ran to Berlin. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, Professor Avram Yoshua Heschel, Nechama Leibovitch, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, Rabbi Chaim Heller. You can't mention greater names than these names. And they all ran to Berlin, and take a look what comes out of Berlin just a few years later. The very professors of the Rav became advocates of Hitler. It's unbelievable. Kasheh lahamin. And here the Rav is in Berlin, and oh boy, in Berlin he's exposed to an entirely different world. First of all, he's exposed to German Orthodoxy. I think my most important contribution in scholarship, outside of my last Sefer in Lumdes, but the most important contribution is translating the Rav from Yiddish into English, Volume 2, the difference between him and Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch. But he's exposed. Here, I describe it in my language, in Warsaw, in Chaslovich, in Chata Shalashudis, they had a Shalashudis, they had a little bit herring, they ate with their hands, a little bit challah, they ate with their hands. In Berlin, they have a Sudashli shit, three forks on the table, two knives on the table. You understand? In Warsaw, he was exposed to an Agudat Yisrael, a Hasidish Agudat Yisrael. Oh boy, in Berlin he met an Agudat Yisrael, Rabbi Dr. Ezriel Hildesheimer, Rabbi Doctor, one after another. Dignity. In Poland, Anyone who was a PhD teaching at the university, you're lucky if he fasted on Tisha B'Av. In Berlin, he described Professor Mittwoch, the dean of the Oriental Graduate School, Eugen Mittwoch. Rebbe describes how he came to the university on the 9 days with a beard. On Tisha B'Av he came with shtechshtich. How do you say that in English? House shoes, shoes that you slip into.
Slippers,
shtechshtich. And that's what he wore on Tisha B'Av, and the Rav had a sense of humor. He said to the audience, and don't think that this was Columbia University of today. This was the University of Berlin in the 1920s. I taught Professor Eugen Mittwoch's niece in Michlala. I played the tape for her of the Rav talking about her great uncle. Ah, but he's exposed to more. And this just came up in conversation in Hollywood. I have a lot of Talmidim wherever I go, Kanayin Hara. But real Talmidim, they ask questions. They're not strangers to what I'm teaching. So we would discuss this. He's exposed to another world. This is very important. Gentlemen, we all study Torah. Everyone in this class, including Dr. Krauss, you study in the traditional fashion. You open a Gemara, that's the Daf Gemara. Right or wrong? No? You hear a Shia, who do you Shia? You go, Rabbi Bednash, Rabbi Miller. You hear a Shia? No? In Berlin, he's exposed to Chochmat Yisrael, scientific Jewish scholarship. It's not that you open a Gemara. You open a Gemara, hey, do I have the right reading here? Is this the right text? What are the Haggadah Bach? What are the variant readings? What about Rashi? You have any idea what's going on? You read a Rashi, you know that that's the right Rashi? How many of you have studied with Steinsaltz? Steinsaltz had to make a decision. There are no variant readings in Steinsaltz. Right or wrong, you read the text, the Rashi flows, the Tosfos flows. It's a pleasure, but he had to make a decision. They're now working in Bar-Ilan University. One day they're going to have Kol Hashas Kulo with the proper readings of Rashi. Rosh Hashanah already came out. Professor Arend is heading it up. They're working they have already a system. They know which are the major texts of Rashi. This is an entire world beyond comprehension of the yeshiva boy. And you should know. I've told you this more than once over the generations. I repeat it again for the sake of accuracy that this was my last discussion with Rebbe, eye to eye, face to face, 1983. I had to be in America on Russian business, so I blocked out the last day I'm going to the yeshiva to see Rebbe. The last day. And I taka went, and Rebbe was, I didn't realize how ill he was, but that day his mind was fairly with him. Nebuchadnezzar, he couldn't walk. They let me hold him on the right side. I didn't realize they'd been machabed me, the gabayim. He couldn't walk without help. What's fed from a mensch? Ani model HaKadosh Baruch Hu, alive and kicking, and no youngster. So I spoke with Rebbe. I said to Rebbe, by then I knew how to learn a little. See, it's a big difference speaking to the Rav in the 50s when I was an Amoritz to the 50th power. In 78, I spoke with Rebbe all Shabbos and learning, but then I knew a little bit how to learn. By 83, I knew a little bit more. I spoke with Rebbe. I said, Rebbe, your uncle, Reb Menachem Karakovsky, do you recognize the name? Reb Menachem Karakovsky, recognize the name, make believe you do so. The ignorant pass as the wise. Rebbe Nachum Karakovsky was married to Pesha, Rebbitzin Pesha's sister. And he was of a Lushan graduate, but he was very unique because he had an appreciation for Chochmat Yisrael. So he asked his nephew many times, look in the library in Berlin, what is the proper reading in the Maimonides? Is there a variant reading? Is there a different text? Rebbe Nachum Karakovsky, lo aleinu, had a manuscript on the entire Rambam, Avodat HaMelech. But he only had money to publish the first part, and he died young, 1929, 1930. and his widow, the manuscript perished during the Holocaust. So we only have the Avodat HaMelech on Sefer Hamada and Sefer Ahava of the Rambam. And time and again, he asks Rebbe, Ben Gisi Hagon Hatzair, Rabbi Yosha Ben, Ero Yair, Chipes et Aktav Yad, V'shalach Li Gisa Acheret. So I said to Rebbe, Rebbe's face lit up, he didn't deny it. I said, how many times does he quote you? I found four. The Rav says, no, there are six times. I got back to Israel, had a Talmud here in the Kollel, Klausner, Yudigi. He's a real interesting character. Rabbi Mark knows him. I said to the Klaus, check out Avodat HaMelech. He found eight different places. I quoted in a footnote in the Rav where the Rav is quoted by his uncle. So you see, this too, very interesting. Did the Rav become a devotee of Chachmas Yisrael? Dov, I'm going to give you a gift. I told you when I came in Aliyah in 69, I understood right away I will never make a living here. But if I won't make a living, I want to know Kol HaTorah Kula. I went out of my way to find people who knew the Rav in Warsaw and in Berlin. Anyone who survived was in Jerusalem. Anyone who survived. Look at my work, you'll see who I quote. So anyway, I got hold of Rabbi Avraham Abba Weingart. Our whole relationship is an unbelievable story. He was the Talmud Muvhak of Rabbi Chiyudak of Weinberg after World War II. His father was Rabbi Shaul, the top Talmud before World War II. So Rabbi Avraham Abba told me that Rabbi Chiyudak told him, I quote, as given by me in class, Abba mein Talmud is a nicht given. What is he saying? The Rav sat in my classes occasionally in Hildesheimer, but he was not my Talmud. I interviewed Joseph Burg, and Joseph Burg, you got to remember, he was a character par excellence. The man spoke 8-9 languages. I once saw in Heichal Shlomo 8-9 people standing around him. He looks at you, speaks English, looks at you, speaks Yiddish, looks at you, speaks French, looks at you, speaks Spanish, looks at you, speaks German. Everyone he spoke in their native language. I once called him in my research. I said, Poma de Be'aron Rakefet, Atalo Aron Rakefet, Atah Aron Ratkov, Shalita Atsa. I couldn't believe his mind. So he certified that the Rav, when he first came to Berlin, sought out various people, including Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov, but he did not adopt his approach. The Rav became much closer to Rabbi Chaim Heller. So you see, this is a fascinating question. The Rav did not engage in Chachmat Yisrael, but he certainly had an appreciation for it. And here I'll tell you a story, B'didi Havi Uvda. It happened to us. The Rav, by the way, for those who weren't here yesterday, this was a gift from a very prominent heart surgeon, a Talmud of mine, that the Rebbe has to drink out of a New York Yankee bottle. Unbelievable. Must be a din in Kedushat HaMayim, like Mei Tara, Baruch HaTov Adonai Melech HaOlam, She'akol Nieh B'dvaro. I want to thank Dr. Lenny Pianko. I'm actually using the bottle. I had to empty it out. You can't take water onto the plane. It's unbelievable what the Arabs have done to the world. Unbelievable what Abbas did yesterday. He cursed the President of the United States. Unbelievable. I don't know. You can be angry with the President, but I wouldn't curse him if you need his hundreds of millions. But anyway, the Rav gave Shia. And in those days, it wasn't like today. Everyone goes back and forth, New York, Tel Aviv, New York. So a Jew comes into the classroom, and he interrupts, and he says, Rav Soloveitchik, Sholchulti, Mei Yerushalayim, Professor Orbach, HaSefer Chadash Shalom. And he puts down on the Rav's desk, where the Rav is giving shiur, the Professor Orbach, who evidently Ephraim Elimelech Orbach, who the Rav evidently knew from Germany, the first edition of the Balei Tosfot. This is a classic work in Chachmat Yisrael. It then was one volume. Later it comes out in two. I got rid of the first volume. I have the two volumes set today. So the Rav leaves it on the table, and he's giving shiur, finishes shiur, he's exhausted. And like I always walk out of shiur, I forget to take my tick with me, my briefcase, whatever you call it. You know you've lived in Israel too long when Hebrew comes easier than English. I forget the tick. So the Rav forgot the sefer. So we were still in the room after Rebbe walked out, and we see the sefer is there. We open it up, a whole Hagdasha to the Rav from Professor Ephraim Elimelech Orbach. So I say right away, gentlemen, we got to bring the sefer to his mother across the street. That's where he's staying. So we go across the street, bring the sefer, come back to the Beis Medrash. We're learning. The Rav evidently met with Reb Shmuel Belkin. And then when he finished with Reb Shmuel Belkin, it dawned upon him, he didn't take the sefer. He walks into the classroom, it's not there. He walks into the Beis Medrash, and he comes over to us, boys, the sefer they brought me, where is it? We say, Rebbe, call them Yikru, Ani Aneh. We already brought it to your mother's house. Ah, he was relaxed. But what does that story show you? This is the 1950s, long after he was in Berlin. But there a heresy had for Chochmat Yisrael. He didn't dismiss it out of hand. You read me, Yosef? Someone else, you'd bring that sefer, Rosh Yeshiva, an Irish type. They're going to find out, you know the part, that if you want to know what type of tobacco Rashi used, you have to ask Tzuntz. If you have to know what Rashi said, you have to ask me. That was an attitude in Germany. The Rav didn't go with Chochmat Yisrael, but certainly there was Derech Eretz. I saw it in those words. And you all know what happened. The Rav had one son, my classmate, named after his Seder, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. Chaim, it's without exaggeration, no one has ever equaled Chaim. He's the golden standard in the ultimate fusion of traditional learning and Chochmat Yisrael. Look at his work on Stam Yenam. It's overwhelming how one human being can know so much. Goes way beyond Rabbi Yaakov Katz, his professor. If the Rav's happy with Chaim, that's a different question. He probably would have been happy had he been a classic Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva. But as far as Chaim's interests and abilities, wow. And I said to Chaim, you should know, when that sefer came out, I said to him, Chaim, I don't know if there are 10 people in the world who can understand the sefer properly. I said, I'm one of the 10. I just made a seam on it. But I want to tell you, you're the golden standard. He cried. He was overwhelmed. He said, you have no idea. But it's fascinating that he merged the lundis, the learning, the rishonim, the achronim, and all that he did. All right, I want to summarize. I want to talk about something else in a minute. I have to be Marketoifa, but Halacha L'maisa, we're just scratching the surface with the Rav. But I'm depicting his life, and there's no question that the best description of the Rav is a brisker gong in Western context. If you want it on a more informal basis, a Rosh Yeshiva who read the New York Times. There was never a feeling with Rebbe that we're in two different worlds. Yes, that he was a gong, that he was way above us in learning goes without saying. How do we compare ourselves to him? But we were totally at home with him. There was never any breach to overcome. There was never any chasm between us. Totally at home. Totally in our world. Totally understanding us. And giving us at least some ability to understand him. Rebbe already, even though it was all Yiddish, when I came to the Rebbe, everything was yet in Yiddish, but that era was over. He already was the old country, But there was Boston, there was New York, there was the United States, there was RCA, there was the Union of Orthodox, there was Young Israel. He walked, lived, breathed the air of the American scene. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I'll pick up right where I left off next week. Be'ezrat Hanotein Layo'ef Koach. I want to share with you a story that was the high point of this trip. And I stand in awe of Chabad. You can criticize me from today to tomorrow. I'm not a Chabadnik. Ich hab geblieben a Litvische, remain a Litvak. But what I saw. And here we come back to my youth, and unfortunately my most famous Sheyura ever. Embarrassing, but everyone knows me as the man who gave the hespit for Joe DiMaggio. It was just you can't imagine how many people want the DV today, this, what do you call it, not DV, CD, the two CDs. 15 years ago, when DiMaggio died in 99, when DiMaggio died, it was publicized all over the world, he died in the arms of Morris Engelberg. Morris Engelberg was Jewish, of course. Seems when you follow DiMaggio's life, he only trusted Jews. So Morris Engelberg was his lawyer, his publicist, managed his money. Morris Engelberg, a Yiddish cop, a Jewish boy from Brooklyn, goes on to become an estates lawyer, appears before the Supreme Court, a Yiddish cop. So when Hollywood, Florida first contacted me, they want me a scholar in residence, I told them absolutely not unless you enable me to meet with Morris Engelberg. So they really wanted me and they did their research and it turns out that Joe DiMaggio's heart doctor, Dobbins in the Young Israel of Hollywood, the Shomer Shabbos, Dr. Baron. Dr. Baron picks up a phone to Morris, who generally to see him it's $500 a half hour. And he tells Morris, this rabbi from Jerusalem grew up in the Bronx wants to meet with you. Morris, the doctor tells him he has to meet. Student drives me, it's 15 years ago approximately. And here's Morris, tall, towers over me, basketball star in college. And all that red, all he's talking about is DiMaggio, the Catholic charities, the money, what he does. And he was quite impressed with someone's knowledge of baseball, said the rabbi from Jerusalem knows more than I do, and he decided to give me a gift, and he goes into the safe where he gives me the most expensive gift anyone has ever given me. No, it's more than a ball, it's a whole painting and whatnot, $2,000. The ball he gave to my Talmud, who I said, you have to be a rusher, that you got your reward, Bolam Hazeh. Right away you got your reward. Good. While Morris is in the safe, I look at all the plaques on the wall. And I look, in the middle, there's a plaque in Hebrew. An Eitz Chaim graduate. When Morris comes out, I say to him, Meshala, what the heck ever happened to you, an Eitz Chaim graduate? You're a Goy Gomer today. Oh, you're hacking us a Chinik with Catholics and Schmatlicks and money and the church and this. He says, Rabbi, all I remember about Eitz Chaim is the rabbis beat me with a ruler. And I've quoted that many times. All right, you're entitled, freedom of choice. Go to Hollywood, Florida. And my Talmud, Rebbe, we got to go see Morris Engelberg again. You got to go see, he moved, he downsized, he's older. Let's go see him. Lo and behold, he calls the secretaries. Oh, Morris is busy, blah, blah. Check with Dr. Baron who we are. Within a minute, we have an appointment. And last Monday, we go to see Morris Engelberg. He would have kept us there all day. I had to apologize. I had to speak that night. All he spoke about, Yiddishkeit, Torah, what he's doing with his money. Chabad got hold of him. This man, with his wife and his two daughters, one daughter is his partner, here, come into his office, thousands of these little placards piled up, Congregation Judea Beit Chabad, Rabbi Joseph Bronstein, Rabbi Chaim Schechter. The synagogue is now called Beit Moshe Ben Moshe. I didn't know Morris never knew his father. His father died while his mother was pregnant. I know a few people like that. Rav Shmuel Pesach Bogomilsky of Newark is called to the Torah Rav Shmuel Pesach, Mena Rav Shmuel Pesach. If you know the history of Hildesheimer, Rabbi Kaplan, Avram Eliyahu, who succeeded Professor Hoffman, was called to the Torah Harav Avraham Eliyahu Ben Harav Avraham Eliyahu. He never knew his father. He gave $100,000 to build this beautiful little base medrash. This is on Stealing Road, the other end of Hollywood. More than that, and this I had read about in the Israeli newspapers, and now I put it together. He gave them the right, the legal right, that the social hall is called the Joe DiMaggio Social Hall. Gave them a gift, a memorabilia of worth thousands of dollars hanging on the wall. So any kid that's bar mitzvah in this shul stands next to the pictures of DiMaggio in the Chabad shul. And all he could talk about, what he did Rosh Hashanah, and what he did Yom Kippur, and the Shabbos meal, and once a month they have a meal for the public leader. We walked out of there. Kol HaKavod to Chabad. Unbelievable how they picked Morris up and brought him back b'lei v'nefesh. Until now he used to daven in a conservative temple. It's a Torah V'das rabbi who became a conservative rabbi in Florida. So I have to say, we were overwhelmed by Morris, where he was, and where he's at. La'richit yamim tovim. We gave him a copy of my hesped for Joe DiMaggio, and now the way they put it out, I have my picture with YU Gris behind me, DiMaggio with the stadium, and I told Morris, but he's confused, he still can't put me together, because I speak English, talk Bronxite English, and yet I've fought in two wars, served in the IDF, worked for the Mossad. So I told him, Morris, the ultimate embarrassment, I show these CDs to my great-grandchildren. I have one great-grandson who's a ball player, soccer player, basketball player. He's good. And he's the kid I asked, Ma yotech hashuv v'lmol Torah l'sachei kadur basis kadur regal. And he looks at me, Ta yodeya saba, zed yotech hashuv v'lmol Torah. You remember what I told him in my new modern Hebrew? Kanita oti im hatshuva hazoti. You bought me, you have me, you own me. And I say to Morris, and I show my grandchildren this ultimate achievement, the Bronx kid with DiMaggio, and they don't even know who DiMaggio is. Another comment I want to make that just is so troubling. This is the latest Jewish action. Anyone can have it. It's a beautiful issue about what we're zeichet to with the Orthodox press today and publication and mishpacha and ami. But this is Jewish action. Not one critique that all these publications are anti-Torah 100%. You don't publish pictures of women. Women don't exist. You don't prepare the generation for real life. Alkenya Zolisha Taviv Ve'imo V'davak Bi'ishto V'hayula Basar Echad. What kind of frumkeit is this? Chilul Hashem. You knock out Hillary Clinton's picture? The New York Times has to write about it? May I quote Rabbi Ruchem Gerelek? As Amiyiskeit hab ich noch nicht in mein ganzes Leben gesehen. You knock out the Chofetz Chaim's wife's picture? I cried when I saw that. The famous picture of the Chofetz Chaim talking to his son with his second Rebbetzin behind. What, is every male a sex fiend and every woman a sex siren? Is this who we are? Is this chinuch? Is this education? And with it all, there are more sex crimes than ever before. Period. Exclamation point. It hurts, and that's Jewish action. Say something. Don't put the beautiful article. Kala kavod. Beautiful. You get, they tell me, mishpacha, my wife won't let it into the house, but all right, I have to deal with it tzaddikin. But they tell me you get before Yontif 2,000 pages, glossy pages. Beautiful. But teach Torah. Don't teach idol worship. Ugh, terrible. Mark, this is for you. They want to give out copies. This is going up like a wall. Since your children live here, you have the right to read it. If anyone else wants a copy, two are left. I gave out many in America. This is for Yitzchak. Pass this back. This, if anyone here has a Hasidish soul, when a Hasid gets married, Lubavitcher, they give out a gift. This is a gift that was just given out of a manuscript of the Rebbe, a talk he gave, like I just gave a shiur. Talmidim write it out, and the Haggot of the Rebbe, it's very interesting. One Haggot, second Haggot, wow, what a wonderful organization. This is very fascinating. It's the Rebbe, when Pilim begins, he's writing, I know who he's writing to, and the Rebbe is telling him, what you're doing is beautiful. It's Avshalom Dov Lifshitz of Philadelphia. But don't forget to learn Torah, even though you're busy reaching out. If anyone is interested, this is by my student Nomi Zeidman on Sarah Schneera. Very interesting article. How do we evaluate Sarah Schneera? How is she evaluated? How did people look up to her? How did the Haredi world deal with her? Very, very interesting article. This article, Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener gave me, I went through it. It's about Holyoke, the Jewish community. It's interesting. It's a thesis evidently done on when the person is graduating a U of Mass, has to do a senior thesis. I believe this was done in 1968. Where is Belsky today, Albert Belsky?
He lives in outside Washington.
And he's a Frum guy? He remained... you don't know.
He went to
MTA? They're going to MTA. There's no proof of anything, but we hope for the best. What's interesting about the article, he writes about Rabbi Foyer, who we speak about so many times, but he doesn't seem to comprehend who Rabbi Yehuda Leib Foyer was. It's interesting. In other words, and just like I told you, one shul remained Orthodox, and one shul where he was rabbi became conservative. And they refused to hire formally a conservative rabbi. Kolzman, Rabbi Foyer, was alive. You're our rabbi. And I once saw their stationery. They have his name on it. This is the only Adam Gadol who was listed as rabbi of a conservative temple. This is interesting if you know about Tu Gun Kong from China. I remember, it all comes. He was a general in the Chinese army, a Litvischer Yiddisher Mensch. This is interesting in Russia. Two of the big Jewish organizations, two dueling Russian Jewish organizations, made peace. So they now have formed one body. Very smart. This is all about Rubashkin, how Obama refused to let him go, and how he gets out, and how Chabad relates to it. All these articles that talk of America, Rubashkin. I only say, don't turn him into a tzaddik. Brendixem kan kritlach, the guy was not exactly, but he didn't deserve more than 5 years in jail. If you compare it to anything else, the anti-Semitism there was rampant. And Obama was a Sonei Yisrael. Wow. No wonder Abu Mazen is cursing our president. All right. Chabad buys conservative temple. Fascinating. actor rekindles his Chabad ties, Liev Schreiber. If that means anything to you, he's an actor beyond me. Now, here's very interesting articles on harassment. Female rabbis speak out about perversive harassment. Conservative rabbis, female, I have to tell you, I never laughed more. One time I'm carrying the Sefer Torah, Simchas Torah, in the shul I built in Maplewood, South Orange. Some of my old balabatim still alive in the 90s came to see us in Hollywood. And one of the balabatim, Mr. Reb Moshe Sabin, says to me, Ich weiß nicht, wer zu kuschen, I don't know who to kiss first, the Sefer Torah or the rabbi. Believe it or not, I get the same line here. This female rabbi says, the balabatim say to me, I don't know whether to kiss you or to kiss the Sefer Torah. Oh my gosh. My sisters, I hear you. This deals with Kalbach. It's by Neshama Kalbach trying to pacify the criticism of her father, which has exploded today. Me too. Whom to believe? This is the conservative movement in search of a policy with women. And here, Haredim, what I just spoke about, new government database depicts no Haredi women. This is in Israel, what's going on. It's beyond my comprehension. Mailbag, the alcohol drinking at prominent yeshiva is out of control and being ignored. I don't know if it's true or not, but very frightening if it is. And finally, very interesting, Jews find an unexpected home in predominantly black college in Crown Heights. Medgar Evers College has now opened its doors to a lot of Chabadnikim and their rivaling Touro College right in Crown Heights. Victor and Debbie Sachs, the Lubavitcher Rebbe and his insight in helping a sick kid. And finally, if anyone wants to hear Harav Yosef Mizrahi in Hebrew, it is all yours. My dear students, I want to thank you very much for coming and honoring me and listening to some words about Rav Lessen and the Rav. Be'ezrat Hashem, I want to finish the Rav next week. And then I may do one more special lecture. I did it in Hollywood, but I couldn't do it properly due to very time-lick strictures. It's on Rav Ovadia's new volume on Cheta Mamzerut. And if this volume makes the rounds and Lamdanim understand what Rav Ovadia has done, it's going to be a very explosive issue. So you might as well be in on the ground floor, and it ties right in with the high point of Rakafer Aaron, Chelik Gimel. And if only I could have shown it to Rav Ovadia B'chayav, wow, it would totally have strengthened what he writes about. Very, very fascinating. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'Dam.